There's also quite a bit of variety in the types of forages that are grown across the state because of that. We have a lot of folks with growing interest in soil health. We have an awesome group called the South Dakota Soil Health Coalition that has been growing over the last many years. And they have spread so much awareness along with NRCS and Extension about, you know, covering your soils and trying to really build soils rather than degrade them. And so we try to hop on that train in the forage world and help people to utilize forages to do that. So we're able to kind of work together with other groups and kind of focus in different areas across the state and all these different crops. So we'll see people growing cover crops, but they'll do it for the purpose of forage, as well as, you know, soil health and some other reasons that they choose. And so that's really fun because then we get to work with them on how to use that forage, but also how to protect their soils.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible.
Boost your yields with KWS Hybrid Rye featuring Pollen Plus technology. Learn more at kws.com.
Welcome to the Crop Science Podcast Show by Wisenetics. I'm your host, Leo Bastos, Assistant Professor of Integrative Precision Agriculture at the University of Georgia. Today, we welcome our guest, Sarah Bowder. She is the Extension Forage Field Specialist at the South Dakota State University. Sarah, welcome to the Crop Science Podcast Show. And to get us started, I just want to ask if you can share with us a little bit about your background and how you got to where you are today.
Sure. Thanks for having me. Like Leo said, yeah, my name's Sarah Bowder. I am originally from Baltic, South Dakota, so southeast portion of the state. And I grew up on a farm there and always had an interest in all things ag. I've always really loved the livestock. We had a lot of different animals and have enjoyed crops since I was a little kid. So when I went off to college at our state land grant, I decided I wanted to teach ag in high school. And I started getting further and further into that and decided, I don't know. I think I want to do something else with this degree. So I did finish that because I love teaching. But I decided to work at the university for a while and do research, just kind of inquisitive minds inquire, right? And that led me into getting a master's degree a couple of years later while I was working there at SDSU. And I did a master's of plant science with a soil science emphasis and decided to use that to work in extension, which was kind of a goal I had had for a long time at that point. I started as an SDSU agronomy field specialist several years ago, and after a few years ended up working with a lot of forages. So since I was doing so much work in forages and we had a position open, I applied and switched over to be a little bit more localized to the forage area. So now I'm our forage field specialist, and I really enjoy working with the producers. That's really the number one thing about this job that's fun is the people. And I love adult education and trying to help people, but also with the crops too. You know, working with forages has been really fun and a great learning experience because most of us that go to school for agronomy aren't specifically trained in forages, which I'm sure you're familiar with. So it makes it kind of a fun experience because I see and hear all kinds of interesting questions and get to work with lots of different forage crops. So that's a little bit about me. I do have a husband and three kids. We live near Tyndall now, and that's kind of in the south central part of South Dakota. And my kids are 4, 2, and 6 months. So they keep us busy. We farm and I work for Extension. So it's a busy life.
Nice. Perfect. Well, thanks for sharing all that. Really, it's really exciting to see, you know, how your passion developed and really navigating a couple of, or a little bit different fields, perhaps not that much. But as you said, forage training is not something that we get a very heavy focus in school. So it's really, really exciting to make that move and really adapt to that as well. All right. So I know we're going to be talking about a very specific project you're involved in, maybe in a moment here. But can you tell us a little bit about overall what type of forage projects or programs you're involved with and working with your growers?
Sure. So as the forage field specialist for SDSU, I actually don't have any direct forage coworkers. We are always, you know, kind of working on that. But at the moment, and for the last couple of years, it's been just myself. So the programming I choose is really important to me because I'm not able to do everything I want to do because there just isn't the manpower there. So I try to pick and choose the most impactful ways to use my time. So I do get involved in some research, and I do research on the research farm closest to me in the southeast part of the state. But we also have folks doing some forage research on other farms across South Dakota. So that's one thing I enjoy doing, some alfalfa variety trial development. And also we do a lot of annual cover crop work, depending on the year, and winter annual work, looking at hybrid rye versus open pollinated cereal rye, things like that. We also have grazing studies where we incorporate cattle. So I enjoy the research side, but what I really love is the people side. We got to do the research though, so we can give the people the information they need. So I help put on several programs with a collaboration of people that we've kind of put together in the Midwest from Nebraska, Iowa, Minnesota Extension, as well as myself in South Dakota. And that has really been a fun group to work with. So we all together put on a forage field day in the summer the last several years, and it travels around. So this year it's going to be in Iowa. I also do some work in the wintertime with forage webinars with that group, which has been fun because we are expanding our audience and able to reach more people outside of just this local area. And then, of course, there's other programming depending on the year and what booth work that we do in the winter. We try to make a presence at various shows and meet up with our clients whenever we can. So there's other programs, too, but those are some of the bigger ones. And then, of course, I do a lot of day-to-day interaction with producers, mostly over the phone and email, but I will do field visits when people want them. It's just we're in the day and age of technology, and people want to make a quick phone call and get an answer or send a picture. So do a lot of that, too. But really, I think some of the best things we've been able to do lately and reach the most people with have been kind of webinar outreach and the field days that we're able to put on.
Fantastic. Thanks for sharing all that. So for me and also our audience to be more familiar with the systems that you have in South Dakota as far as forage systems, can you describe a little bit of that? Like what type of forage is? I think you kind of touched a little bit on that on your previous answer, but what type of forage crops are you working with? And perhaps also related to that is how is the environment? What makes South Dakota forage systems different or perhaps unique in the way that farmers and ranchers work with it?
So South Dakota is a pretty unique state, just weather-wise and topography-wise from east to west. The Missouri River splits the state. And so on the east side of the river, typically we have more rainfall, more row crops, richer, if you will, soils. On the west side of the state, we have more range. And it gets, the topography changes a little bit, gets more rolling. People think of the Black Hills when they think of Western South Dakota, but that's just a portion of it. We have a lot of beautiful range country out there. And there's still a lot of crops grown, but it switches more to the small grain side. You'll see corn out there, but a lot more annual forages and small grains are grown in Western South Dakota because of the climate and less moisture. So there's also quite a bit of variety in the types of forages that are grown across the state because of that. We have a lot of folks with growing interest in soil health. We have an awesome group called the South Dakota Soil Health Coalition that has been growing over the last many years. And they have spread so much awareness along with NRCS and Extension about, you know, covering your soils and trying to really build soils rather than degrade them. And so we try to hop on that train in the forage world and help people to utilize forages to do that. So we're able to kind of work together with other groups and kind of focus in different areas across the state and all these different crops. So we'll see people growing cover crops, but they'll do it for the purpose of forage, as well as, you know, soil health and some other reasons that they choose. And so that's really fun because then we get to work with them on how to use that forage, but also how to protect their soils. So a lot of the annual crops we grow are cool season. This time of year, it's getting late to plant those. So in midsummer, we still have some warm season options. You know, there's a lot of warm season grasses. Sorghum sedans are popular grazing options. We have people doing tons of corn silage on dairies here. That's pretty common. We'll see even like cowpeas, some of those warm season broadleaves, but we do have quite a few warm season grasses. Hay millets are very popular in Western South Dakota. This was looking to be a drought year, so we had a lot of questions on hay millet coming in, but it has now rained in a lot of areas and kind of relieved some of that stress. So we do see warm seasons, but we have a lot of cool season options in early spring, late summer, early spring and early fall, and then also winter annuals. So we'll see winter cereal rye, winter triticale, winter wheat. People will use those sometimes as both forage and grain crops, depending on. And then, you know, in the spring, the brassicas are very popular, radish, rapeseed, turnip. The seed is accessible and they're not very expensive, but they grow well here. And we'll see people put in mixes with, you know, many cool season grass options, like oats are very popular. Once in a while, you'll see on this barley. There's a lot of options with crops we can plant when we're talking forages, because we're not trying to bring them to grain. So it really opens up the table to new opportunities. But that does mean that sometimes I'm working with people who are growing something they've never grown before. So it comes with its own set of challenges.
All right. Nice. That's really, really cool. A lot of options, a lot of diversity around that topic. So I'm sure your phone is always keeping you busy.
It's good. I like it.
All right. So now I just want to shift gears a little bit and talk about the Northern Plains Forage Association. Can you tell us about that, what it is, what is its role, and how does it work to help growers?
So a couple years ago, a group of growers and industry people in South Dakota and I got together. We did a brainstorming session and we decided there was enough interest to try to start some kind of networking and education organization. There's some great forage organizations across the country, but no one was really reaching deep into South Dakota. Well, there's a couple that do like come into South Dakota and have a few members, and we try to work with them as well. We're not trying to, it's not really a takeover of any other group or like the two groups combined or anything. This is just something new we wanted to try for our local growers here. And it's not South Dakota, it's not South Dakota only. It's called Northern Plains because we really accept people anywhere in the Northern Plains region or people with interest in learning or dealing with forages in this area. So we have members from, probably six states at least. And we really focus on education and networking to bring forage producers together in this area to strengthen the industry. So we promote research and legislation for the betterment of the industry, but we don't dive into those. This is really strictly a networking and education group at this point. So the group has been able to form a board, and we have growers and industry people on that board. I believe we have 12 people, and we meet monthly, and they do all kinds of really great events and take advantage of opportunities with other groups, you know, to host booths and be present so that we can learn from them as well. But the main goal here was to bring growers and industry people together, try to bounce ideas off of each other, learn from each other, and offer events where they can network, you know, have fun. A lot of these people, there's not a lot of opportunities to get together for different events in the ag world. So it also offers that. So we do get in. I mentioned that group earlier with Iowa, Minnesota, Nebraska, and South Dakota. So we do get in with that extension group, as well as something called I-29 Moo University, which is a dairy group consortium of extension folks in up and down I-29, the interstate in this area. So that group with this Forage Association has put on all kinds of events, and it's been really fun to watch it grow. And what we've learned as the Northern Plains Forage Association is that when we kind of partner with other groups, we really just strengthen what we're doing. So we do some solo events, but really the big ones are a field day that is hosted in the summer. We offer these webinars throughout the winter, forage-based webinars for people to learn anything really they're interested in. It's pretty wide ranging in the forage side of things. And then in the winter, every December, we do an annual meeting with educational seminars for a day in Southeast South Dakota. And that's brought in quite a few people each year and been really fun. So really just a group that wants to bring people together in the industry and learn from one another. There's just not a lot of opportunities to learn from someone you can actually talk to face to face. I think the internet's really overwhelming sometimes, and it's hard for people to know where to go or what to believe outside of, you know, government or extension websites. So it's kind of fun to have producers come together in person or on webinars and do that type of thing. So the group is growing, slow but sure. We're just getting a website launched, but I think it's going to be a great group. It's just going to take some time before it really gets to be large like some of these other commodity groups are. I don't think we'll ever be to the size of, you know, the corn growers, but it's been really fun to watch it grow and shift and see people learn from each other.
Fantastic. And just so I have some reference, how has the membership of the association evolved since its beginning?
Yeah. So I think we started with around 30-ish. And now we have closer to 65, I want to say, this year. And we have about 9 to 10 associate members. So businesses that have jumped on board as a business membership, and they get some perks with that. And we try to promote their businesses. But that also really helps to bring in their point of view, that industry point of view, because many of our members are growers, which is great. We do have industry members too, but having those associate memberships allows the industry folks to have a say in things and get their opinion and have their presence at events. So it's, you know, 60 some might sound small, but it's a great group. They're very interactive and they've been very supportive to get things started. South Dakota is typically one of the top 5 forage producing states in the nation, and usually always one of the top 1, 4, 5-ish alfalfa producing states. So I feel like when we first started this, we had this discussion, we felt like we should be able to support some kind of forage organization. I mean, there's an organization for basically every other crop grouping. We should be able to do something with forages. So it's growing. The opportunities that we can offer or that have been offered to the group are constantly evolving and shifting. Our biggest holdup right now is that I'm the technically kind of the director, and I only have so much time. And really, I think the sky's the limit with a group like this. It's just finding, you know, enough time for everybody. And of course, a good board is full of busy people. So just trying to figure out ways to manage time and do more outreach events as, you know, as time goes on.
Fantastic. Well, thanks for sharing that. And perhaps a follow-up on that is, and maybe you have already mentioned some of these, but if you can provide a little bit more information, is what kind of education and networking opportunities are available to growers and industry professionals through both the association and also through extension?
Yeah, so I mentioned a few of them. Myself and other coworkers put together articles fairly regularly for extension. So I write a column in the newspapers here and also online for our website. So there's several online tools that can be used. There's also, like I said, webinars through these groups that I'm working with. Sometimes SDSU puts on its own. We do offer some in-person events in the summer and the winter for, you know, education opportunities. I would say field tours are one of the most fun events that we have. We have a field tour at every research farm that across the state of South Dakota that the university is associated with. And whenever we can, we try to get forages on the agenda. And myself or a farm manager that's doing forage work will go out and talk about them. And it's always fun because it's kind of an unsung hero that isn't talked about enough, a little underappreciated. We have a lot of dairies in the eastern side of the state. So that has brought some opportunities to do dairy programming. So occasionally, you know, we try to dive into that world. Despite that industry really having their own agronomists and consultants, they're still pretty good to work with us and check with those state type recommendations. Otherwise, it just kind of depends on the day and the year. We do a lot of booth work, so we're available at other events that other groups put on. And I try to be a resource, you know, with just with phone and email too, as often as I can. But podcasts, we'll do podcasts like this when we can. And sometimes we host, SDSU does host some of its own podcasts as well. So trying to do as much outreach and be as creative as we can is really kind of the goal. So there's just a little bit of everything.
Fantastic. That's amazing. And as you said, especially with, you know, internet and social media and all these different ways we can get to people virtually, it's really amazing that that the association is using all those different avenues to reach people. It's really, really amazing.
Yeah, you kind of have to try everything.
That's right. Well, I guess, you know, one curiosity that I have around that is, especially on the virtual ways of reaching people. So either, you know, a newspaper, online version of that, or maybe an article, an nutrition article that's online, or podcasts, or webinars, videos, all these different ways. What have you learned from that? Like, what's the best virtual way of reaching people? How are people wanting to consume that information virtually?
So it seems like it really depends. Traditional extension answer, right? It depends. But when we're talking virtual, so when I'm trying to reach people to tell them about an event, it seems like social media is one of the best ways virtually that we can reach people, and then our website. The people that know where to find things will go to our website. But when I'm actually putting on an event and trying to figure out the best way to relay that information to other people, so far I've seen that webinars are pretty darn successful. We can reach a much wider audience. We can very easily record the content so people can watch it later. That's a big one. And we can publicize it, you know, inexpensively, typically, rather than, you know, the folks that are going to be interested in a webinar, you're probably not going to send a postcard to. It's not going to be that expensive to advertise for something like that. So I think that webinars right now seem to be a hit. Once in a while, we don't get a very good turnout, but then I'll see the recordings, and the recordings have a crazy high number, or we'll have people from far off states that, you know, are growing. Conditions are different, but the basics of how a forage grows don't really change, no matter where you're going to put it. So you, of course, have to adapt to the environment that you're putting the crop in. But I think people are just hungry to learn more about forage crops. And there's not a lot of states in this part of the country able to offer a lot of information. So whatever we can get out there is great. I think on the virtual side, webinars are really probably number one at this point. Podcasts, though, also seem to be quite effective. The only problem with a podcast is if you really want to explain something in detail, you can't show someone anything. But I think that they're also probably second in line for being pretty good and effective at reaching people.
Fantastic. Nice. Well, thanks for sharing that. And perhaps, taking the topic of environment and how that environment can change for different growers in different parts of the state. And you were saying earlier that South Dakota is one of the states where you have this rainfall gradient from east to west. And so I wanted to preclude this with the question of, what are some of the considerations that forage growers need to consider when they are under these areas that are already receiving less rainfall, but especially under dry years or drought conditions?
That's a great question. And one of the things to caveat that with is a lot of folks in South Dakota are fitting a forage crop into their row crop rotation. Unless it's corn silage, they're squeezing it in potentially. We do have people that do full season grazing. We do have people like annual crop grazing, I should say. Of course, there's lots of people doing range grazing. And we do have people that specifically grow forages to bale outside of alfalfa. But a lot of what we're working with is folks that are trying to like throw something in after corn silage, kind of in that cover crop time frame, if you will, or they're trying to put something in after an early soybean. They're just trying to find a cool season crop that will fit the window that they have. And it's great because it also covers the soil. We keep a living root in the soil. I mean, there's a lot of positives. But what happens is if it's dry the following year, and let's say we put rye in the previous fall and now it's spring and we're looking at getting that rye big enough to green chop or bale, but we want to get our row crops in. The issue we run into is rye, for example, is one that sucks up a lot of water. And if it's a dry year, you are really risking taking the moisture from your row crop. So priority is a big thing. And I think forages get put to the back a lot of times because a lot of these folks are growing the forage to keep on their farm. And so we're not holding the bill. We don't have the liquid acid in our hand for what that forage got us. So it's easier to be like, oh, I'm just worried about my row crops. Let's just cut this whenever we got to cut it and move on. So that's one of the biggest feats, I would say, in kind of management and trying to figure out that environmental factor. And on the east side of the state, although we have more rain, we still have very dry years. So we just came off the drought monitor, you know, not that long ago, being in a fairly decent sized decently rated drought. So watching moisture is a huge thing. And on the west side of the state, even more so because it tends to be drier, although we do have more forages out there. You'll see a lot more people growing hay millet as their summer crop, you know, in western South Dakota, for example, or just growing sorghum sedan grasses, things like that to be grazed. And they're a little more familiar with it because it's more common in those areas. So big management concerns are the hardest ones are probably trying to fit those crops into an already existing row crop rotation. It can definitely be done, but figuring out the fertilizer and the moisture uptake are big factors.
Fantastic. Thank you. Thanks for that great explanation. And you mentioned something that I was thinking as well, especially when it comes down to the cover crops. You know, I mean, especially in regions where we have droughts or just less rainfall overall, that competition in time for water between cover crops and row crops is something that's always a big topic. So I'm super happy that you touched on that and explained to us how that can be a challenge, and it's also a risk that growers need to take or not, but it's something that they have to be thinking of.
Yeah, you kind of got to pick your priority and what's most important. Yeah.
All right. So we're getting towards the latter part of our episode. And before we get to our last three questions to our guest, I do want to talk with our audience. If you're listening or watching this episode on any platform that you of your choice and you're enjoying this great conversation, make sure to like this episode, like us on social media, subscribe to our channels, and also share this episode with anyone that you think could also benefit from all this great knowledge.
It's time for our famous three.
WiseNetX turns podcast airtime into brand authority. We don't sell ads, we elevate voices. If you're ready to boost your authority in the industry, access WiseNetX.com and speak with a brand authority specialist. Let's transform expertise into influence, starting now.
All right, so Sarah, towards our last three questions that we ask every single guest on this podcast. The first one here is, do you have any resource that you found to be very useful in your career, and especially related to agriculture, that you could share with us?
You know, honestly, when I thought about this question, the best resource I have is the growers I work with. Sounds like a cop-out answer, but it's the truth. We can find answers to a lot of our factual questions when we look things up, look up label. You know, I get a lot of questions about herbicide labels or any type of pesticide label, or for example, you know, crop management, what's best practice for a crop. We can typically find an answer and adapt it to our situation. But when we run into a real pickle and we can't figure out how to get something done because of a particular situation, the best answers I ever have received from things that I couldn't figure out were from growers who have had that experience. So I think if you're really looking to try something new or diving into farming and you're young, I would seriously get involved with neighbors, people around you that you trust. Doesn't mean you have to do exactly what they do, because we joke all the time in Extension, at least here, we joke about don't just go out there because your neighbor did it, you know, make informed decisions. But there's a lot of knowledge and experience and people who are willing and vulnerable enough to tell you the mistakes they've made are people that are going to help you succeed. So that would be probably honestly my number one resource is the people I work with.
Fantastic. Thanks. That's it's such a great point. And I don't think it's stressed enough. Just having that network, having that those people that have been through different things that we can learn from. So it's such an important resource for sure.
For sure.
Perfect. All right. So our second question of the three is very similar. So still a resource that you found to be useful that you could share with us. However, outside of agriculture, do you have anything to share there?
I'm in the busy season of life. So like sitting down and reading a book is so not a choice I can make. But I would say, especially for people who have young families or you're on the road a lot, I really do enjoy podcasts, and I could list a million of them that I enjoy listening to. But, you know, even if it's a podcast in regards to the season of life you're in. So if you're a young parent or if you're a grandparent, you know, finding someone that's got some reliable, good information. If you have a faith, just listening to opinions and thoughts and conversations on that, or even whatever you may do related to obviously some kind of crop. If you're listening to this podcast, just finding other producers and forums on podcasts that are discussing issues, whether you agree with them or not. I think sometimes it's fun to listen to things I think are maybe just a little bit off. I'm like, oh, I don't think I agree with that. But it's so good to hear other people's perspectives and keep yourself well-rounded. We live in a really polarized society, especially now. And I think that being able to agree to disagree or listen to other people's perspectives is really important. So I do love podcasts. I like listening to a variety of, you know, opinions and ideas. And you can't take everything to heart, because the old joke that I read it on the internet, it must be true. It's so far from the truth. But that would be one of my other resources that I like, is looking up podcasts.
Fantastic. I really like the point you made as far as like going out and perhaps listening to or reading something that you don't fully agree or perhaps are not fully comfortable with that idea. Because, I mean, these days it's so easy for us to stay in social media where the algorithm is just feeding you things that you like to see and read. So we don't really normally get those outside views different from ours, just through those algorithms that social media is trying to keep us engaged. So I think that's such an important point. I really appreciate you bringing that up as well.
Yeah. And it's a way for someone, you know, I don't have a lot of time to do like leisurely things right now. And that's, I'm fine with that. But being able to just listen, it's not something you have to think really hard about. You can just listen to somebody else. And I think that's a really great opportunity anyway to kind of stretch your mind.
All right. So our last question here of the three is, in your opinion, in your experience, what are the skills or skill set that you observed around or that you observed in successful professionals?
Honestly, I think the number one skill that a successful professional, whether you're an administrator or the janitor, is listening and attention, paying attention to others. I really think that if we all just stopped, me included, and listened to the people around us and to nature, and, you know, when we're talking farming, if we just pay attention a little bit more to what nature's trying to tell us, sometimes it makes life a lot easier to work with it than against it, you know, even though I swear it works against us sometimes. But I think listening to other people, especially in the people setting, is really important. And that's where we see people fall. You know, I think that's where people make the biggest mistakes and have the biggest issues, is they just move forward with their thoughts, whether it's intentional or not, and they don't stop and think about how it affects other people and listen to other people's thoughts and opinions. Don't have to take them. It's just good to keep them in mind.
Absolutely.
That's my two cents anyway. Not everyone probably agrees, but
I definitely agree with that as well. I think that we can listen with intent of listening, really, and not just with intent of answering back, right?
Right. Just saying, thinking about what you're going to say.
Right. Yeah, no, that's definitely a skill that I also treasure a lot and try to further develop. It's something that we really have to be aware of and explicit in being better at it, for sure.
Yeah, I think some people are just inherently better at it. I mean, I have a friend who can, just listens to everything, and I can be in a conversation for 10 minutes and have great intentions and not have any idea what we're talking about. So it's got to be more, for me, I have to try a little harder.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing that. And with that, we get to the end of our episode here. So Sarah, thank you so much for being our guest today. I really learned a lot with you and really appreciated all the thoughts you shared with us, and also for providing some great resources for our listeners who are interested in Forge systems, especially in or near South Dakota. You get out of this episode here with a lot of actionable resources to go after and further learn and network as well. But thank you so much. Really appreciate it having you here today.
Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without the time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on your $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.